Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 scores scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No. No. I'll talk to D. Rose. Yeah, guys. Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop a text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Matt, how are you? Welcome back. And I highly, highly, highly disagree with both you and Matt Spiegel yesterday talking about the Delete 8 tournament and not wanting to see Bulls basketball return. But how are you and how you doing?
What's up, Jordan? Wait, so you're telling me that you did want to see that Delete 8 tournament happen?
I could talk myself into it pretty quickly. Yes, I was talking myself as I was listening to them talk about it too. I was talking myself more and more to it. The one thing that's deterring me the most from it, Matt, is the injuries. I don't know if I could bring myself to watch one of our key guys go down with a bad injury in a meaningless tournament, but everything else sounds great. I would love bad basketball. Bad basketball is better than no Bulls basketball, right?
I mean, no, it's not. Because
it is,
you just gave, you just killed your own argument with the what is the point of the risk? These games would be meaningless other than dusting off the rust of players who aren't going to play for a while. And I understand that any practice isn't quite the same as actually getting full 5-on-5 basketball against a different NBA team and real NBA competition. But that's it. That's the only benefit you're getting. And along with that, the new regime being able to evaluate the talent the Bulls have. But I'm sorry, they can still evaluate their talent in practice and the risk that comes with playing completely meaningless basketball. It is a no-brainer decision to me. You are taking unnecessary, very high calculated risks in a situation where really are you gaining all that much? What are you risking versus what are you gaining? It's a simple situation to me. And I'm sorry, I'm looking forward to watching the NBA resume with those 22 teams, and hopefully when they knock off some of their rust, getting some better basketball in the latter playoff rounds, because we all love NBA playoff basketball. I'm looking forward to that. And when that's over, we're looking at a very quick offseason and a short turnaround, and then I'll be excited for Bulls basketball in 2021. But no, I'm sorry. Nothing gets me hyped about a Delete 8 tournament featuring our pathetic 20 games under 500 Chicago Bulls. None of it.
And these guys are men.
So you don't want to see a quicker evaluation period on Jim Boylan? That would be the other thing that's kind of a positive to it. If this were to happen, is Eversley and Kardashovas would get their opportunity to evaluate Jim Boylan and do it the quote-unquote right way. And we'd also get a chance to evaluate some of these players, too, that we haven't seen play in damn near, it will be like damn near 6 months. But I'm just being selfish as a basketball fan. And I've said that before, man. Like, you and I have talked about the 3 years of pain we've gone through, and all the other Bulls fans listening to this, too, diehards and not. Watching the Bulls play over the last 3 years has been painstakingly difficult. I'm going to be honest with you. I miss the adrenaline rush of trying to find out which way the Bulls are going to blow a fourth quarter lead. You know, I kind of miss that rush. It's like it's a twisted fantasy of adrenaline rush, hope, excitement, and then it turns to anger and depression within about 12 minutes. So yeah, I don't know. I miss it.
You're tripping right now, man. You're tripping.
Well, the reason why we're talking about the Delete 8 tournament and potentially like a game play in is because those eight teams have been left out of the conversation about playoffs, returning to basketball, and the Bulls are a part of that. And so we kind of teased it yesterday that we were going to set up and do the first eight picks of the mock draft. And the Locked On Podcast Network has been doing this mock draft now since Matt and I joined in 2017. So on the back end of this episode, we did a crossover with the Charlotte Hornets guys, both Doug Branson and Walker Mell. And they talked to us about who they would take at number eight, who we took at number seven, and the guys that preceded us. So it's an interesting conversation, and you guys will definitely be interested in on who Matt and I decided to take. It's an unfortunate situation, which seems like we've gotten ourselves into this with a difficult pick over the last 3 years, Matt. So I'm excited for our listeners to hear this.
An unfortunate situation. Man, doesn't that sound like the motto for the Chicago Bulls of recent history? Jordan, before we get to our crossover with the Locked On Hornets guys, wanted to tell you that our episode of Locked On Bulls today is brought to you by Blinkist. It is my new favorite ultimate life hack. It's hard to find time to sit down and read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read and work on your personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem. I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser, and it takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know info from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. That's right. With its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you work out. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health, to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from the bestseller lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles that, let's be honest, you always meant to read, but you never quite had time to. I like to start my day with a little bit of Blinkist every morning while having that first cup of coffee and just some information outside of the sports world to kind of clear my brain, do a little bit of self-help, self-improvement, get ready for the day. Here's the best part. Right now, with Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our Locked On Bulls audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
All right, let's get to our conversation with the guys from Locked On Hornets. Stay with us through the end of that because Matt and I will be back on here on the backside of it for 8 to 10 minutes to kind of explain a little bit more in depth of why we took the pick that we did and just kind of wrap things up. So without further ado, here is Locked On Hornets and Locked On Bulls crossover.
Welcome back to Locked On Hornets. Walker decided to let me actually lead this segment because I won the Malik Monk argument, according to Rick Bunnell, according to Rock Bunnell. You heard it last segment. He declared me the winner. I'm pretty sure that's what he said, right, Walker?
That's false, emphatically false, but you have not stopped glowing. As soon as he said anything negative about Malik Monk, you did not stop glowing over that fact.
I'm glowing because this is an amazing show, because this is it's the Rick Bunnell show, but it's also the Delete 8 Mock Draft 1.0 crossover show. And we've got our friends from Locked On Bulls, Jordan Molly and Matt Peck in with us. Hey, fellas, how you doing?
Hey, you guys. Thanks for having us.
First and foremost, we have to congratulate y'all on that giant fish MJ caught the other day, right? Like, that's the breaking news of the sports world.
Hey, listen, when I saw the headline, I got nervous. It said that Jordan catches 442-pound monster. I said, wait a minute, did the Hornets sign Eddie Curry? Oh, my God. I got scared.
That's excellent. So see, that's what you should be glowing over. It's that joke. It's nothing to do with Malik Monk. You can glow over that. You can have your moment.
Okay, thank you. All right, so this is how this is going to go, this crossover special that we're doing here. Essentially, we did a Delete 8 mock draft. So all the eight teams that were uninvited to Orlando got together, did a mock draft. We had the eighth selection. Our friends at Locked On Bulls had the seventh selection. If you want to hear some of the other crossover shows, you can head over to any of the Delete 8 teams, and they'll be featuring these this week and next week. But first of all, I think we should just talk about sort of where our seasons went until they were suddenly stopped, and how that sort of is going to affect how our teams approach the draft. Matt, where are the Bulls and what are they thinking in terms of this offseason?
It's really weird. We're all talking about how this is an unprecedented situation for the NBA. I think it's also an unprecedented situation for the Bulls as a team specifically, given that they are one of the Delete Eight teams whose season ended abruptly. And even before we got word on what was happening with the potential resumption of the NBA season, the Bulls finally, after 17 years, created the massive front office overhaul that we kept hearing whispers about, bringing in Arturis Karnišovas from Denver, Mark Eversley from Philly, ousting Gar Forman and putting John Paxson in an advisory cabinet at the United Center. So obviously that was the really weird thing about the Bulls season, which went disastrously. And when the league paused on March 11th, the Bulls were 21 games under 500 in a season when they said immediate day, the playoffs are the goal. So it was certainly a failure. And that, I think, is what led to that front office change finally happening. And now it's just kind of a weird situation where, because of the pandemic, the new front office can't even get to Chicago to start shaking hands and evaluating not only the roster, but the other people in this organization and the roles that they perform. So it's a strange holding pattern for the Bulls right now.
And Walker, that's kind of similar to the Hornets that, you know, we heard from Borrego and Kupchak, that the head coach and the GM, that all of their momentum as an organization stopped on March 11th. They beat the Heat, but then they had to cool down for now what looks like 6 to 9 months. But it's different with the Hornets, right, Walker, in that they're in a situation where they don't have any stars. We just heard from Rick. I mean, the organization views it as they don't have any stars. They're kind of in a holding pattern and that they're waiting on some talent to join the organization.
Mitch Kupchak has been adamant that this team needs talent, and this is not the first time that we heard that in his exit interview on Monday. I mean, we've heard him say that before. We play a soundbite frequently that Mitch Kupchak says, "We don't have any all-stars on this team."
We don't have any all-stars on this team.
Excellent timing. Thank you. Yes, when we talk about Mitch Kupchak and the Hornets, like, he knows. I'm comforted by that fact that he is so transparent. He knows what the deal is. The thing is, though, I feel good about the direction this team took. I mean, we're talking about a team that a lot of pundits had as the worst team in the NBA this year. And PJ Washington comes in and he's a borderline. He's certainly going to make one of the two all-rookie teams, but he's borderline first all-rookie team. We'll see whether he gets in there or not. But you get this explosion from Devontae Graham. You know, it's not a team that you're looking at next year is even going to make the playoffs, but it's the positive direction to me. It's a step in the right direction that they took, having the expectations that we did at the beginning of the season. And so I look at this team as far as this year goes. It's weird to say that it would be a success given the lack of wins that they had. But I wanted to find out what they had and some of the young guys. And I feel good about some of the pieces that they have. At least surpassing what we anticipated from them.
Okay, so that's where the two teams are, Hornets, Bulls. Bulls in this mock draft picking 7th, Hornets picking 8th. Jordan, what are the Chicago Bulls looking for in the draft, or what should they be looking for in this draft before we get to our actual picks?
And something the Bulls have been looking for since they dealt Jimmy Butler, and that's a guy that can play both sides of the ball and also play the wing spot, which is the most important spot, I feel like, over the last few years in the NBA. And it seemingly the Bulls find a way every single year to not have that guy healthy or just try to piecemeal together. I mean, this year, the Bulls and Jim Boylan had Shaq Harrison playing the three at some points and in like critical moments. So when you have a point guard that's 6'2 playing the three and asking him to go out there and play some tenacious defense, it's going to turn out all right in some situations, but for the most part, Matt and I didn't want to see that anymore. So it's going to be an elite level wing player, a guy that can play defense at a high level, and also a guy that can facilitate and help Lauri Markkanen, help Zach LaVine, and the other guys kind of flourish on the offensive end.
And on the Hornets side, obviously we know two of the things that they didn't do very well this past season: rebound the basketball and protect the rim. So both of those could be a priority in the draft. We know that fit is not going to be a big deal. It seems like, at least from the comments that we've gotten from general manager Mitch Kupchak, he doesn't feel like fit is an issue right now, that they've really just got to find the best player available wherever they end up selecting in this draft. But I think if you were talking about needs, definitely two-way play, definitely size at the guard position. They're a little low on that. And then somebody that can do some shot blocking and play some defense down low, I think would be some priorities that they're looking at overall and may be able to find in the NBA draft. Okay, in the next segment, we reveal who we selected in this NBA mock draft, why we selected them, and maybe were there players that got selected before them that we would have rather seen on our teams. You're listening to this crossover special, Locked On Bulls, Locked On Hornets, Delete 8, Mock Draft 1.0. Before we reveal who we selected in the mock draft, we need to tell you who was selected prior to the 7th and 8th pick. So with the number one overall selection, Golden State, Locked On Warriors selected Anthony Edwards. Cleveland selects LaMelo Ball. Minnesota goes with Obi Toppin. I'm telling you, folks, Toppin is going to be a top pick. People are starting to notice. Atlanta going with Killian Hayes. Detroit goes with a player that I love, Onyeka Okongwu. The Knicks select Denny Avitaha. And then with the 7th pick, the Chicago Bulls selected James Wiseman, kind of out of Memphis. Matt, we'll start with you. Why did Locked On Bulls select James Wiseman with the 7th pick?
I think this is one of the classic examples of best player available as opposed to drafting for need. You know, you just heard my co-host Jordan talking about the Bulls' desperation at the wing spot, especially a two-way player. And obviously Otto Porter Jr. is the incumbent starter who's almost certainly going to pick up that, you know, enormous player option he's got for this coming season. But beyond that, there is no real plan with the other young pieces of the core. The Bulls are still weak at the wing. But given the board and given who went 1 through 6, I think our collective decision was Wiseman, despite the Bulls' backlog in front court positions, is too good of a potential talent to pass up at this spot. So obviously, with this new front office regime and Eversley and their player development crew, we would put the trust in them to evaluate, okay, what can Wiseman do compared to what is the front court future of Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr.? Should we decide to move on from one or both of those pieces? To us, it was a simple situation of let's grab the guy that we think has the best star potential in the league, because Wiseman at various times has been thought of as a number one overall or number two overall caliber pick.
Before you made the selection of Wiseman, we were definitely, Walker and I, talking about Wiseman and Devin Vassell being the two players that we had an eye on based on all of the players selected beforehand in the mock draft. And you made our decision a lot easier. I was more in the Wiseman camp. Walker was more in the camp of selecting Devin Vassell with our 8th selection. So we did, in this mock draft, we selected Devin Vassell out of Florida State with our selection. Walker, you won this round because sort of by default because Wiseman was gone. But why did you want Vassell over Wiseman, even if Wiseman would have been available?
I think both of us were also okay with the other person's choice here. I mean, if we take Wiseman in this scenario, if it does become reality, I'm cool with it. But I am starting to fall a little bit in love with Devin Vassell. This happens with me every draft. I fall in love with a prospect, and Vassell is being that guy for me this year, Doug. The reason being, I think you put him in a lot of different situations with the guys that we already have on this roster in the backcourt, and he fits with a lot of the guys that you have with Devontae Graham. I think Devontae is small. Devin Vassell is a 6'7 shooting guard. And I think he can bring you defense and he can be the scorer, the 40% three-point shooter that he was at Florida State. Devontae can easily facilitate to Devin Vassell. You put him and even Cody Martin in the backcourt at the same time. One, that's crazy defense. It's a big backcourt. And Cody Martin has played the point before. He can facilitate to Devin Vassell. Terry Rozier can even fit, much like Devontae can, where Terry can maybe bring on the one responsibility a little bit more and facilitate to Devin. Also, I think defensively, Devin Vassell, that's a guy that is a two-way player. Offensively, can put the ball on the deck a little bit better than I think people give him credit for. Had a ton of dunks at Florida State. He's athletic as well as a really good shooter. And I even think he's got some passing ability. I love him, Doug. This is the guy that I kind of want. I don't know how high I would take him given some of the other players there. Like I don't know if he's fourth on my board, but I mean, I really like him, and I like the pick here at 8 overall.
Jordan, I'm curious, was there discussion about Devin Vassell at all with that seventh pick, or did you guys key in on early on Wiseman and say we can't pass this opportunity up?
So we didn't have any discussion actually about him. We had more discussions, and it was very, very brief, about RJ Hampton. I think watching James Wiseman fall all the way to seven, it was almost a no-brainer, even though the Bulls have Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen. And it's funny, in our mock drafts before that, I went back and looked. Matt and I selected Marvin Bagley in one of our previous mock drafts just because he had fallen again to seven. So looks like the Bulls, and for Matt and I, scraping up the pieces. But RJ Hampton was a pick that we would have taken had we fallen back a little bit farther. We also aggressively talked about, if this was a full mock draft, about moving the pick or potentially moving Wendell Carter Jr. or Lauri Markkanen if we ended up with James Wiseman.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And Walker, I think the Hornets could consider that as well, depending on where they land in the NBA draft lottery. A lot of questions we still don't know the answers to. I think and the Hornets also have a early second round pick. So I think they're going to have some maneuverability, some options wherever they land.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and one thing the Hornets can do, and this is something Mitch Kupchak talked about on Monday, he talked about using the cap space that they're getting this offseason. Maybe you bring on a bad contract and get some candy in return for it by getting a draft cap, maybe getting some type of maybe a first round draft pick. I don't know, but this is a team that's not looking to make the playoffs next season. So they can get based off of taking maybe a bad contract. And so I don't know if maybe that's the route that they decide to go to. And real quickly, guys, Matt and Jordan, I want to ask you, man, the Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter discussion, that's crazy interesting to me, just as far as the future storylines of these Elite Eight teams go, because they're both first round picks, and I feel like both of them had some promising rookie seasons, but I don't know if it worked all that well out for you guys. I mean, of course, you guys know a lot better than I do. Just your overall opinion, Matt, I guess we'll start with you. What's your overall opinion as far as whether Lauri and Wendell can coexist together on a team that does find real success in the postseason?
Yeah, I think the crux of the issue is that towards the middle stages of this season, Wendell was a lot more vocal about his preference to play the four instead of the five. He certainly is undersized, even in today's small ball NBA, to play the center position. He has the skill and the basketball IQ to make up for that lack of size, but he is certainly undersized. We've seen that be an issue with him when it comes to foul trouble and also just kind of being hung out to dry in the over-aggressive trap defensive system that Jim Boylan insisted on using all season long. As far as the chemistry between Lowry and Wendell specifically, the Bulls' offensive system that Boylan insisted on using, that was sort of like a dumbed down analytics for dummies emphasis on eliminating mid-range three-pointer shots at the rim, despite not really having the correct personnel to run something like that. We didn't see a whole lot of chemistry because we saw Lauri Markkanen oftentimes being stuffed in the corner around the perimeter. We saw Wendell look like a player who was afraid to even look at the basket, let alone shoot, when he had the basketball in his hands. So a lot of what Bulls fans are concerned about right now and hoping can get better is that this new regime will come in, evaluate what went wrong this past season as those two players didn't progress, but either stagnated or, in Lowry's case specifically, certainly regressed. See if they can fix that and see if Wendell and Lowry is still a potential front court for the future. But there are plenty of doubts around that.
Jordan, let's go to you next as far as just with these guys coexisting on the floor. Do you think that they eventually hold on to both of these guys for, I don't know, a couple of years into the future, maybe the long term, or do you think eventually they settle on dealing one of them?
I think I place my money on one of the two guys are going to end up eventually get moved. It just makes a lot of sense. I mean, with Carter especially, I think about his first 2 years. Think about the two massive injuries he's had. He's only played two half seasons in both of his first 2 years. A lot of that has to come back to the amount of physicality that comes at the center position. And Matt was talking about how he's undersized and, you know, as a center who's 20 years old, banging bodies with guys like Robin Lopez or Boban or name your center. It's going to add up over a long period of time. So Wendell wanting to shift to the four makes a lot of sense. It seems like he played a lot. played a lot better in college there and was a lot more comfortable with there and maybe more comfortable with his offensive skill sets. I don't see Karnisovas giving up on the reclamation project that is Lauri Markkanen. I think he's here to stay and he's here to stay for the future. I just feel unfortunate for Carter. It feels like he could be the guy that's the odd man out, but he also has the most value. If you sell Lauri Markkanen right now, you're selling him at his lowest point possible. With Carter, I disagree about that. I think a lot of people across the NBA still see a huge upside for Carter. So it's not that Matt and I don't like Carter. It's the fact that I feel like he could bring us the most value by but also at the same time, the Bulls retaining some of the pieces that they have so they don't have to go into like a rebuild 2.0, if you even want to put it at that. So I would put my money on Carter being moved over Markkanen.
Walker, I'm now curious why you're curious. I mean, are you getting a little bit of an itch here for Lowry
conspiracy? No. Well, I guess it would make some sense, right? I mean, maybe a little bit, but it more so towards the five. But no, that's not why. I just am genuinely curious as to what the front court situation would be for the Chicago Bulls in the future.
Could I interest Matt and Jordan in a little Malik Monk special?
No, don't get rid of Malik.
I'm just seeing if they're interested. I'm not doing anything. I have no power. You know, on the radio the other day, you like made me put on my GM hat. First of all, Mitch Kupchak has never worn a hat, but I don't know why people ask those questions. I have no power. I'm not the general manager. I can't make decisions, but I can ask Matt and Jordan if they would like Malik Monk.
Ooh, man. I don't love him. As a player, like I'm not clawing to get him on my team. I don't know about Jordan. I would be curious to know what you guys what you guys are feeling as far as Malik Monk and the future, long-term future with him and his contract. Cause that's, you know, when it goes back to Lowry, that's thing I think the Bulls fans are concerned about right now. Most people don't believe that the Bulls and Lowry are going to get a new contract done before them to start next season, that they'll let him play out the final year of his rookie deal. But people are throwing numbers around about what kind of extension Lowry would want. And based on the season he just had, he's nowhere near that. Do you guys feel comfortable with what kind of money Monk is lined up to make? Do you want him to sign a long-term deal to stick around?
I mean, I don't. Walker, actually, that's an interesting question for Walker, because Walker is definitely a Malik Monk apologist. I'm definitely not that, but I would be interested. Yeah, Walker, are you interested in signing him? Because he is signed. They picked up his option, but then they would have to do a qualifying offer for restricted free agency after next season. They're certainly not going to do an early extension or anything like that. But Walker, yeah.
Right.
I'm gonna put you on the spot.
My whole point about Malik Monk, I don't know why you're scared to put on the GM hat. I will gladly wear it and sport it around. The thing about Malik Monk, it's not necessarily that I think he's going to be this big star that deserves an early extension. I think that it's a guy that I still want to hold on to because I think the potential is there more than just sending him for pennies on the dollar. Like if you were to get rid of Malik Monk right now, I don't think the value you would get in return would be worth sending him to another roster. I understand that we have some real concerns about the suspension that came his way for violating the NBA's anti-drug policy. Okay, I get that. The dude was playing a lot better in February. Like, it's not that he started catching fire because shooting numbers can go in and out, and I get all of that. The dude fundamentally changed the way that he played by attacking the rim a lot more and facilitating and being part of winning basketball. Now, again, it was not a part of the competitive stretch they had against good teams. I get that. But I would let him play on this last year of his deal. And then I don't think that the value would skyrocket so much that he would price himself out of the Hornets market. And or I don't think that it would be this crazy big contract he would call for the Hornets not being able to pay him. Right. Like that's my whole point about this. I still think the potential is attractive enough there for us to hold on to him.
Sure. Monk Markkanen, straight up. Let's get it done. Okay.
I'm not doing that if I'm the Bulls, right? Like that's not something I'm going to
shut up, Walker. Shut up. You're killing all of our leverage. You're killing all of our bargaining. All right. Well, we'll get back to this.
I'm not sure you had much leverage.
Okay. Before we get you guys out of here, in the next version of this mock draft, so mock draft 2.0, the Delete 8 Locked On Podcast Network mock draft, we are going to shake things up and actually do a little 1-8 lottery. So if Matt, we'll start with you. If the Bulls end up with the number one pick, what are you thinking right now?
Oh man. Look, Bulls fans have been hounding me about LaMelo for like 2 years now. Obviously what we've seen from him more recently, playing professionally, is a lot more encouraging than the previous stops, where I think he was dealing with just way too much pressure and also not an ideal situation. I will not deny his potential star talent. And the Bulls certainly are still looking for that all-star, borderline superstar potential ceiling kind of player. We thought maybe it could be Lowry after his strong rookie year. Zach LaVine's clearly a gifted scorer, but you know, maybe is just that, and not a guy that can really lead a team as the best player on a team that makes deep playoff runs. So I'll say this. I'm willing to take a swing on LaMelo being the star prize of this draft with one condition, which is that LaVar Ball gets a restraining order that keeps him far away from the city of Chicago. I cannot stand that dude. I think he's a terrible influence on his sons.
Jordan, what do you think? You in agreement there, LaMelo with the number one?
Absolutely. I want LaMelo in a Bulls uniform, and I want LaVar as close to Chicago as possible, because man, if there's one thing we've learned with Jim Boylan, is the entertainment factor of guys who act like characters is endless. And honestly, LaVar would be, and honestly, we don't even really need LaVar anymore. The front office is different now. What I was telling Matt was, is LaVar could be a leader of the Bulls fans to try to make change for the front office, but that's already happened. So we may not even need LaVar's services. But regardless, I think LaMelo, by and far, is the best of the two guys at the top. Although I will say Anthony Edwards looks like every bit of a third disciple of Tom Crean, who is known to bring out Victor Oladipo and also Dwayne Wade. So he's got two of those guys who are multi-time NBA All-Stars. One's a Hall of Famer. So Tom Crean knows what he does with NBA prospects. And I think you guys have a guy in Cody Zeller who he was able to turn into an NBA player and a decent one at that pack. So I love Tom Crean. I was an IU guy, so I'm split, but I would take LaMelo.
Listen, if you love things that don't show up in the box score that are somehow invisible, then you love Cody Zeller. That's just bottom line. He does things that aren't in the box score. I don't know why he doesn't do things that are in the box score, but he does things that aren't in the box score, and people love that. Walker, are you going to make it 3 for 3 here on Melo?
Number one overall, yeah. I would take LaMelo number one overall. I just think when you're talking about his potential compared to everyone else, I mean, Anthony Edwards was the guy that seemed to be holding on to that number one moniker for a long time. And then it just seems LaMelo had kind of passed him, even as we've spoken to NBA pundits all across, you know, any platform in which we speak with them. You know, Chad Ford was somebody that came on and then he talked about that as well. And so to me, I think LaMelo Ball is a guy that I would have separated above everyone else. The facilitation factor, a big guard, right? Somebody that can make plays for everyone else. Already coming into the league the first year is going to be one of the best passers in the NBA. I like that being on the Charlotte Hornets roster and making everybody else better. I would select him number one overall if I had that choice.
Will I make it 4 for 4 on LaMelo Ball? Yes, I will, because I think that in a weak draft, there are really only two players in my mind that have the potential to be what the Hornets are looking for. They want a player that can get them into the third round of the playoffs consistently. They want a player that is a talent level that is a franchise shifter. And I think two players fit that bill in my mind, or at least have the potential to do that. That's LaMelo Ball and James Wiseman. But LaMelo has less mystery around him, and I would love a facilitator like him to be a part of the Charlotte Hornets. And I don't care about all the LaVar stuff. I really don't. I think Lonzo has shown that the kids are all right, that the kids don't have to listen to the dad, that the dad does the dad thing and the kids do the NBA thing. And I think that would hold with LaMelo as well. Matt and Jordan, thank you so much for doing this crossover. This has been a blast. We really appreciate it. And hope, honestly, I'm going to say this. I hope we don't do this again. I hope one of our teams gets the number one pick for 2.0. So I hope I don't see your faces again, but that's a compliment.
Dude, I mean, who are we kidding? The Bulls are using the number 7 pick in every draft from now on until 2065.
In every conceivable multiverse, the Bulls have the seventh pick. I feel that way about the Hornets. I feel somehow the Hornets are going to pick ninth, 10th. I really feel like a slide.
We're going to pick 11th again. That's what we do. We pick 11 every year, except for the one year we picked 12, except for that year that we did.
Doomed. Two doomed franchises. I hope you've enjoyed listening to two doomed franchises. Really doom it out and duel it out.
But man, how great was that documentary?
Oh, that was fantastic for both of us. Yeah, for both franchises, that was fun.
You can just see the vibe.
All right, thanks for Locked On Hornets and Doug Branson and Walker Mill for setting that up for us. And it was a good conversation. Very funny conversation. Matt, the one thing that I couldn't get out of my head, though, and this is very off topic with the Locked On Hornets guys, is Walker Mill sounded like a caffeinated Ryan Russillo. And I couldn't get it out of my head to save my life. But very, very same voice complexions. And I don't know if anybody thought the same thing while they were listening.
Oh, dude, I was tripping out. I thought the exact same thing. We'd had a conversation, I think, with him back in the day. We did a crossover with those guys like a couple years ago. But I either hadn't noticed or forgotten that detail. But I was thinking the exact same thing. I was like, are we talking to Russillo right now? And honestly, it like got my head a little bit. And I was like, salty, because I don't know about you, I can't stand Russillo. I think the guy is a gigantic D-bag. It was really weird. But you're right. They sound identical on the mics.
And it's weird because I don't really, like, the only time I've listened to Russillo is it hasn't been watching him, like, on TV. He used to be on ESPN. Him and who's the other guy? Who's the former football player he used to do the show with? It doesn't matter. But they used to do an ESPN show, and you used to be able to watch it live. Kind of how David Haw and Cap used to have their show too on Comcast Sportsnet, where you could watch it. But yeah, I was tripping out. Yeah. So
yeah, Cap and Haw in the WGN studio. Yeah.
So obviously, as you guys listened, Matt and I selected James Wiseman. You're probably sitting there thinking, like, what the fuck? Why? How did James Wiseman fall all the way to number 7? Good question. And again, Matt and I struggled with this decision. We're like, okay, well, we could dig a little bit. We could dig and reach for a guy that maybe might be in the early teens that would solidify that wing spot that we talked about being the number one need for this team. Or we can just take best available and deal with the problem of having too many good big men and figuring it out later. And I think you and I made the safe choice of taking the highest upside in Wiseman, which sounds like from everything that I'm hearing, Wiseman, LaMelo Ball, and Anthony Edwards seem to be having the highest ceilings among any of these guys in the draft.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the consensus top three that we've seen among a variety of mock drafts and speculation right now. And I think for that reason, and the fact that this is in general terms known as a pretty weak draft class, for me, it made the most sense, especially in a weak draft class, to just take best available as opposed to drafting for need. Because, you know, how far down are you going if the Bulls really say, OK, we have to have a wing, we want to draft a wing, when maybe you're missing out on a potential star who doesn't necessarily happen to fit a position of need for the Bulls right now, but pieces can be moved, trades can be made, you can figure some things out. To me, it just seemed like too much of a potential ceiling to miss out on with him than it necessarily did to go with the draft for need situation, especially because some of the other pieces that I maybe would have not like overreached for, but would feel good about picking at 7 if they were still on the board as far as the wings, were off the board and taken ahead of us. So I said this to the guys before we started recording, before you hopped on, Jordan, the Locked On Hornets guys. To me, it's kind of a Michael Porter Jr. situation that I saw us in, but without the scary medicals. Because if you remember, you check the tapes, I was against MPJ. We'll see whether or not I'm right after his small sample size of looking pretty good for Denver when he came back this season. But because of the medicals, I understood why all the teams that were scared off, including our Bulls. But when it got to Denver being like, okay, well, there's a risk reward here and he's fallen this far, why not? And even though falling to 7 is not as fall as MPJ falling to 14, I kind of saw a similarity there where it's like people talked about him being maybe the number one pick. And if he falls to us at 7, even though we have Lowry, we have Wendell, heck, we even have Gafford in the wings, I thought,
this was the best move.
You know, it reminded me of 2018 when we were talking a lot about the mock draft, and you and I were going back and forth of like, shit, man, if Carter doesn't fall to us, if Bamba doesn't fall to us, who do we take? And that was kind of who we were going back and forth. Does Trey Young slide all the way to 7? And he sure enough didn't. He went 4 in our mock draft. And we ended up with a difficult decision. We're like, okay, do we take Mikal Bridges, which is the safe pick at the wing, or do we take best available? And Marvin Bagley was the best available at that time in 2018. You and I made the same decision we're making here in 2020, is take best player available, highest ceiling on a player, and that was Marvin Bagley, who we took in 2018. So that's what it reminded me a lot of this year. And even like going back to 2019, we made the pick that the Bulls made at number 7. That was Kobe White. Even though some picks were kind of mixed up in the middle of our mock draft, but to give people kind of a context of who was taken before and how the first mock draft in 2020 went for us, the Warriors with the first pick took Anthony Edwards. The Cleveland Cavaliers took LaMelo Ball at number 2. The T-Wolves took Obi Toppin from Dayton at number 3. Killian Hayes, the international high school prospect, at number 4 to the Hawks. Number 5, Onyeka Okongwu from USC at number 5 to the Pistons. The Knicks selected the guy Matt and I, and before Matt and I even talked about it, we both, I think, said this was the guy that we were going to take, no doubt about it, if he had fallen to 7. And that's Denny Avdija, the international prospect from, I believe, Israel. And he's the guy that has been talked about a lot to wing player. Reminds me, I hate to make the corny comparison, but reminds me of a very young Tony Kukoc in a lot of senses. But he went number 6 to the Knicks. So that left us with the decision of, do we take James Wiseman or do we dig a little deeper in the draft and maybe take RJ Barrett or somebody else that can kind of fill that wing spot? But I think you and I made the right decision here, because it leaves a lot of doors open to be able to move pieces, especially with the new front office, and we don't know what they're exactly going to do.
Yeah, and as you and I kind of discussed with with Walker and Doug, like, it obviously gives us an even more crowded front court, and we're not quite sure about the future of Lowry and Wendell, and whether that 4-5 combo is actually going to work. But the flexibility of, we have another added piece of quality young talent. He does even kind of have like a different body type and a different skill set than Wendell and Lowry. You know, he's 7'1", he's got a 7'6 wingspan, he's 240, so clearly capable of playing the center position in the NBA in the traditional sense. We haven't seen a lot of him as far as the offensive tools to his game. He's got some nice post-up stuff. He shows at times he can do a little bit of mid-range stuff. Not exactly a beat-a-guy-off-the-dribble guy like Lowry has shown in flashes, but not consistently enough. But I'm with you. I think it's just a matter of taking a player who has the highest potential of those players left on the board and putting the faith in our new front office to figure out where the pieces fit and which pieces are pieces that fit here and which pieces are pieces that fit in the sense of, we are going to flip this piece to get ourselves a piece or pieces that we actually see ourselves needing and benefiting from in this new path that we're creating for ourselves.
The one thing that we didn't get to discuss, and maybe we can do this at some point either on Friday's episode or sometime next week, and we're going to have plenty of time to talk about the draft over the coming months, but was the idea that with us taking James Wiseman, leaving the door open if the Hornets wanted to take him at 8, or in fact, if the Hornets wanted to take a completely separate guy and the Bulls end up moving one of their key assets, whether it be, it doesn't seem like Lauri Markkanen's going anywhere, but just throwing the idea out there of one of the two guys being moved, or Wendell Carter Jr. And like you and I have talked about, we've had a lot of discussions about this, and it seems like fans are split on whether or not it would be worth it, given Wendell's value, to move him for other pieces of need on this Bulls team right now? Or do you feel like the ceiling is high enough for Carter to kind of wait on that and see what Carter Chauvis and whoever comes in here as the new head coach to try and fix that? So I don't know. It puts the Bulls in a weird spot, but not necessarily a bad one either, because getting James Wiseman at number 7, if that was reality, Matt, I would be doing backflips. I would be doing absolute backflips and very excited for the start of the season. But I just, for whatever reason, I don't feel like it's going to shake out that way.
I would be surprised, unless something drastic happens between now and when that draft is. And when did we decide that draft was? Mid to late October, right? After the finals are done. They gave a specific date when they started releasing dates. I can't remember, but it's somewhere there in mid to late October. So something between now and then happens that would cause, you know, Wiseman to fall considerably. I would not bank on him being there at seven. But what that does, of course, mean on the flip side is that there are players that went ahead of us at seven that would still be on the board, whether that be, you know, the international prospect Denny Avija, or a guy that I know, I think you and I both really like, Killian Hayes. I would expect that regardless, Obi Toppin from Dayton is going to be gone by seven. Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball as well. We'll see how it shakes out. But in this mock, and I think we're going to do a couple more over the next couple of months with the Delete Eight teams and shake things up as far as how the ping pong balls go. But as far as the Bulls being on the clock at seven with those players off the board and snagging Wiseman at seven, I had no complaints.
I'm with you. The NBA's deadline to withdraw for any of the players wanting to return to college basketball for another year is now moved to August 3rd. The date for the lottery, no setbacks, in this case, would be August 25th. And then the date, pending no interruptions with the pandemic, would be October 15th. So, Matt, if there's a finals game seven, and that's October 12th, 3 days later is the NBA draft. So talk about just absolute insanity going on in the NBA in the start of October, if that's the case, and everything plays out the way it should. So should be a lot of fun in the fall and the start of the winter for these new seasons for the NBA. So we got a little bit of time to enjoy our summer the best we can and have all these discussions about what if, who if, and who the Bulls may or may not go after. But I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Again, we're going to have a bunch of these mock drafts coming out over the next several weeks and talking with a bunch of other Locked On Bull or Locked On Podcast Network shows and talking about with them who they may draft and maybe having some discussions about possible trade scenarios. So look forward to that. Tomorrow is going to be a very, very special episode. You guys will not hear from us. You guys will hear from a roundtable discussion from the Locked On Podcast Network that is going to be across all of the shows, and a very, very important, very impactful, very powerful conversation on Black Lives Matter from some of the minority and black hosts of the Locked On Podcast Network. So that conversation will be out in our feed on Thursday. Matt and I will be back on Friday with a brand new episode. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com